Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 437.
Today, Melissa asks, I'd be interested to know how you develop characters at the very beginning, from the first germination of the idea, to build up to a fully formed character, the protagonist and the supporting characters. How do you do it? Well, Melissa, there's a couple levels on which I could answer that question. One of them I've got a running series on called Deep Characterization, where I talk about the theoretical background that I've got and the levels of characterization I consider on the fly as I'm working with characters. But since that's already going on over there, I'm going to attack this on a different level. I'll talk procedurally. What do I actually do as I'm riding along and a character pops in? Characters come at me from a variety of directions. Sometimes, like if it's the protagonist of the novel, it can be a high concept type of place. I've got an idea for a story and I need someone for whom that story fits. And so I get the germ of an idea for whom that story will fit and start scribbling and developing out from there. So, like in the case of Hadrian's Flight, I actually needed to write an adventure story on a deadline. So I looked at my favorite adventure stories and thought, well, you know, I haven't seen a good boy's adventure story in a while. I had just written a girl's adventure story in The Automotive, which is finally coming out soon here. And I hadn't done a boy's adventure story before, and being that I was a 13-year-old boy who was heavily impacted by boy's adventure stories, and I've always had a love for them, I still sometimes reread Stratemeyer Syndicate books like Tom Swift and The Hardy Boys just for fun. I figured, well, I'll do that sort of thing. So that sort of thing has got a formula, right? You need a boy of a particular age. Needs to have a particular kind of relatability to the audience. Now, the audience around today is not the same one that was around at the height of the boys' adventure story boom in the 1940s and 50s. And the world I decided to set it in, because I was under a deadline, I wanted a world I didn't have to build from scratch, so I'd grabbed a world I had laying around, so to speak, had particular constraints and cultural things going on, so I had a predefined framework I had to work within. So I made him a 15-year-old kid who gets displaced and loses his parents by being sent off into exile to avoid being sucked into a war. A lot of good stories I read like that that were written back in the 50s and 60s, because there were a lot of people coming of age and writing books at that point who had had that experience as children in World War II. So I thought, that's a good premise. So my character developed out from the premise, iterated out from there. So I'm just going to do a sort of recap of my reasoning process in question and answer form. And quite frequently, it's not at a conscious level anymore. But if I get stuck, I'll sometimes pull it up and try to figure out what's going on. My subconscious did something like this. Okay, well, I need to get a kid sent away. What kind of parent sends their 15-year-old son millions of miles away to avoid a war? Well, one answer is any parent that doesn't want their child to get killed, and they're expecting a battle to happen right here. That's a normal answer, but it's not necessarily an interesting answer. There's no tooth to it. It's so universal that it feels generic. I needed to get my emotional hooks into it. I needed a particularity. I needed a special reason. It's a war for independence, and they're afraid their son might get drafted. Ooh, now that's a little more interesting, because then you have the issue of the parents trying to control their son's fate. Well, why would they do that other than no parent wants to see their child get drafted? Well, what if they are ideologically committed not to be involved in violence? Then they would be ideologically committed to preventing their son from being involved in violence, too. They would be real, genuine philosophical pacifists, which would explain why they live out in this trading post on the frontier. Because they are away from where wars happen, so they never have to face having a war coming over their hometown and not being willing to fight because they don't believe in violence. That's the kind of moral dilemma they have opted out of by moving to the frontier, as frequently happened with Quakers and other pacifist groups in American history. and has frequently happened also in Indian history with Jains and other pacifist groups in Hindu culture. Okay, so we've got that going on. Got a good basic premise. Now I get to fill out the character. What are his likes and dislikes? What are his commitments? What kind of conflict does his parents sending him away put him in? Why would he want to stay? If he disagrees with them, that's one thing. But if he disagrees with them, that's the obvious conflict, right? Son rebelling against parents. Well, I mean, that's been done. That's been done to death, and that's the easy path. And I wanted something that wasn't quite the easy path because it would make it more interesting for me. So what if he agrees with his parents, but there's other reasons he doesn't want to go? You know, not just he's leaving his home, but maybe he's leaving someone really significant and special to him. Well, he's 15 years old, so it could be a girlfriend, could be a best friend. But by this point, I'd had this kid developed out, and I didn't really see him having those kinds of connections based on his other priorities, right? He wasn't quite sexually mature enough, emotionally mature enough to have a serious girlfriend yet. His social interactions with other kids centered around his hobby, and so he might have good friends there, but he was part of a family business, and the kids I've known that have been part of family businesses and have taken that part really seriously tend to sacrifice the kind of close social bonds that other sorts of kids would have in their high school years. So who's he going to have a close bond with? Could be a sibling, could be his parents. But I know the kind of thing that would have killed me as a kid, and that was if I had to leave a dog behind. My dog, when I was a little kid, got me through the darkest years of my life. Just the fact that she was there, you know, she was always a dependable friend, got me through times when there was nothing else for me to live for. What would it be to have that kind of bond and be forced to abandon it because dogs don't travel well in space? Oh, there you've got some stakes, and now you've got a quest. This kid wants to get back to his dog. And the story evolves sort of along those lines. And I just, you know, I go along looking for questions and answers. When new characters pop in, I wonder why they're there, and I get them talking until they say something that gives me a hint about why they're there. I've come to the point where I trust my subconscious enough that if a character shows up, I figure there's pretty good reason they've shown up, even though I consciously don't understand what it is yet. And so I will write them out until I have a good grip on why they're there. So there's characters that come into and out of this kid's life. Some of them are conning him. Some of them are trying to enlist his help. Some of them need him. Some of them want to keep him away from the people who need him. I didn't plan any of that when I started the book. I just let the characters speak to me as they spoke to my main character and observed the implications of their language and intentions. And that's frequently how I'll characterize. Sometimes I get an idea, a high-concept character. You know, I want a military guy here. I want a business person here. I want an archetypical mother figure here. Sometimes I'll start off with that. But, you know, I don't stay there. I use that as a starting point before going through these iterative processes. Frequently, what I'll look for when a new character comes in is the conflict. What's this character's deal? How is he or she driving the other characters in the story nuts? So, like, my favorite character in the Clark Lantham books is Lantham's assistant, Rachel. She's gone from being a bit player to being almost the star of the series. I mean, Lantham's still the star of the series, but Rachel is now running her own investigations. She's had her own book that was almost entirely from her point of view. I really dig this character. I had never intended to make her more than a walk-on because I had a slow part in the book because I needed Lantham to have a secretary. Because you do. You know, it was one of those genre constraints. And I said, okay, well, you know, I could make her the stereotypical blonde bimbo, but, you know, I'm bored with that. I want an interesting character here. Could be a dude. Nah, there's all sorts of dudes that Lantham's talking to already. I want someone that'll really get under his skin. I want someone that'll irritate him. And irritate him for non-obvious reasons. Maybe irritate him for reasons that he's embarrassed about. Like things that he thinks he shouldn't be irritated by, but she pushes those buttons anyway, and in doing so, reveals part of his character. So she originally came in as she was to irritate Lantham. And it worked supremely well, and in irritating him in that first book, she winds up saving his bacon. because of the same qualities that make her irritating. And she's not irritating for the audience. She's just irritating particularly to Lantham. And those same qualities that make her irritating are the qualities that make her indispensable as an assistant. As tends to happen when people take on protégés. You know, the thing about protégés that make you crazy are all the things that remind you of you, that you don't like. Rachel's got all of that stuff. She's very much her own person. But she and Lantham have enough in common that they will continue butting heads from here to eternity. And I really like that. And so because of that, and because of the parts of Rachel that have been revealed through her friction with Lantham, she has grown into a character that can carry books on her own, and so she's starting to, and I am really, really enjoying that. And I enjoy her whether she walks on or whether she's carrying a book. And I can't wait to see where the story goes from here because of that. Some characters are entirely situational. Chanji Aya came about because I needed someone for the story of the Resurrection Junket to work. I needed someone who is a complete outsider. And so she is as complete an outsider as you can get. She doesn't even speak the language as well as her colleagues. All her colleagues are native English speakers, and English is her third language, or her fourth language. And so that shows up in how her point of view articulates itself, and all the way down. She is as much of an outsider as you can get, but the fact that she's an outsider drives the whole book. She's not the hero of the mission that she's on. She's supposed to be an observer, but her role as observer becomes pivotal in ways that it sometimes has in the history of science and technology. And so I wanted a character that would feel as alien to herself from her own point of view as she felt to the other members of the team and as she felt the other members of the team were to her. Well, because of the places I grew up, I know a lot of people who have grown up as immigrants or as second or third generation immigrants with one foot in the ancient native culture, or who have gone off on diplomatic missions and lived in other parts of the world for long stretches of time and had to learn how to navigate in other cultures. And so I drew on a lot of that experience to shape and inform who Zhi Yi grew into. And her name is Zhi Yi because Chan Zhi Yi Aya in Chinese, the last name comes first. To inform who Zhi Yi grew into. And then she developed again because of who she bounced off of and why. A lot of my characters develop because of who they bounce off of and why. I get the feeling that this character would not react well to that situation, but I don't know why. So I allow them to react the way that I'm feeling that they should react. And in the process of that reaction, I learn a lot more about who they are and how they work. Aside from the germ of the idea part of it, for me, it's very like the kind of process you go through when you get to know an actual person at a party. You know, whether it's a big party or an intimate dinner party, you get to know somebody by first how they present themselves and then who they reveal themselves to be through their behavior. And my relationship with getting to know characters is very much like that. For what it's worth, that's my process. Other people have different processes that seem to work really well. I know people that develop characters from Dungeons and Dragons types of character sheets. I know people who develop characters from a spec list that they need to fill a narrative. I know people who develop characters because the name feels a certain way in their mouth, and that feeling has an emotional resonance with them that leads them down a certain path. There's no wrong way to do this as long as you get good characters out of it. But for what it's worth, that's my process. Thanks very much for the question. And I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc. and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.